Great to have you along for Garden Talk today. You know, as gardeners, we tend to focus on what's above the ground and not the soil or plants that the soil or plants live in. Next up, we're going to talk about why soil is so important with our guest. Bryant Scherenbrock is an associate professor of soil science in the Soil and Waste Resources Department of the College of Natural Resources at the UW Stevens Point. So we'll talk with him about soil. Bryant Scherenbrock, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on. I listen to the show quite regularly, and I'm really happy to be on and talk a little bit about soils.
Well, I tell you what, as a matter of fact, it was great. You sent us an email and said, you know, we're in your experience, gardeners forget often about soil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they sure do. I think it tends to be one of these very important subjects, but also quite complex. But there are a lot of, you know, simple things that we can do to manage soil quality and work with the soils to help grow our plants and also provide and support the other functions that soils also give us.
So, you know, let's get everybody started on the same page. How do you define soil?
Oh, that's a great question. So first off, I would say that soil is not dirt. I do distinguish soil from dirt. And there's some things that I think are important when we consider a definition of soil. First is that it's a natural living being. It's composed of organic matter, but it also has this mineral component of sand, silt, and clay. It has air. It has water. It is very complex, which is another thing that I use to define it. It has physical, chemical, and biological properties. And all of these things are working together to provide very important functions for us, like water storage and cleaning, like a habitat for soil organisms, even the plant, the buildings and infrastructure. It recycles all of our waste. It modifies our atmosphere. And of course, we grow our plants in it. And that's probably the most relevant for your audience. Other things when we think about a definition of soil that I point out is it's really the interface between all of the water, the air, the rocks, and the living organisms on our planet. And it's not just this static interface, it's dynamic, meaning that it changes over time, it changes across space, it changes with depth. And then the last thing I always like to emphasize this in a definition of soil is that it's fragile. I think that's something that folks will forget. You know, it's underneath our feet. We're walking on it all the time. And we think it's this resource that we can do whatever to, and it's just going to continue providing the services, but that's really not the case. We can damage soil quality in a matter of seconds by driving on it at the wrong time. And that can take thousands of years to repair. So that's my definition. So I know it's a little bit long-winded, but it's definitely not dirt.
So what's dirt?
So for me, it really depends on the person. So for me, there's very few things I would consider dirt, but dirt is more of a nuisance. So even the stuff that's underneath my fingernails, I appreciate it supporting life. I don't mind it. I consider the distinction being something that's a nuisance.
How'd you get interested in soil, by the way?
So I started off as more of a plant person. I still am a plant person. I have degrees in forestry and I study tree and soil interactions, but I started digging some soil pits and looking at soils, particularly this was up in the upper Michigan underneath some of those old growth forests, northern hardwood hemlocks, and saw these spectacular soil horizons where they have this accumulation of iron and aluminum, and so much so that it cements up, and then so much that cementing works with the forest and creating these restrictive layers, and that works to make the trees tip over. And this really cool, complex feedback loop was kind of presented to me, and I after that, I was hooked. I just can't stop digging holes. I dig them all the time. Yeah, every time you dig a hole, you get to go back thousands and sometimes even millions of years in history, and really put together the landscape. So it's just amazing for me.
As you were talking about that and your definition of soil, I was thinking of a great soil scientist from the University of Wisconsin, Francis Hole.
Oh yeah, yep.
And he would teach his classes. He'd take his violin to his class.
Would, yep.
And so this is what sandy soil sounds like, and this is what Antigo silt loam sounds like, and just the varying notes and tones within the music kind of gives you, as you were explaining that, I was thinking about his playing and how that kind of worked for me.
Yeah. I don't know, Larry, do you know the Antigo song? So Francis came up with the State Soil song, which is the Antigo song. And it's a beautiful song, but y'all should Google it if you don't.
His home, actually, where he lived his life here at the UW, he's passed, of course, along a bit, is only a block behind my own house. So I walk by it pretty much every day and think about him. He was a pretty cool guy. So the plants we put into it, it's so important to the plants we put into it, and depending on the soil itself, it makes a difference to the plants that you want to put in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the principles of soil management, and this is probably the most important principle in my opinion, is this idea of the right plant for the right soil. There's thousands and thousands of different types of soils out there. And there's also thousands and thousands of different types of plants with all different tolerances for different soil conditions. And oftentimes soil management is focused on like, what can we do to fix the soil and fix in quotation marks. But, another approach we could take is, what can we do to match the plants with the existing soil conditions? And we can learn a lot about this just by looking at the natural plant communities and looking at and studying the soils that are associated with these natural plant communities, and then try to mimic these soils for the target plants. So, for example, if I want to grow a red pine forest, I know that I would want maybe a sandy, more acidic soil compared to if I was going to grow a forest with sugar maple. Maybe I want to do some syruping. Well, then I would maybe want to have a more fine textured soil, a layer with maybe some clay accumulation, a little bit more fertility. So I think a lot can be done by understanding the plant and soil relationships.
Yeah. A lot of that came up in our segment of our program with Neil DeBoe. Many people were talking.
Yeah.
Neil was quick to point out if people had what kind of soil they had, and they'd give kind of a description, and then he would sometimes disagree with them based on what they said. But mostly he would say, well, you can't grow these plants here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was listening along. It was excellent. I particularly like some of the recommendations about some of those wet, more fine textured soils and plants like sensitive fern. That's just excellent advice. And why work against these soil conditions? Instead, we can embrace the plants that are going to really succeed in those environments.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian Scherenbrock, our guest today, Associate Professor of Soil Science at UW Stevens Point. We're talking about soils and plants and their relationships. Maybe you've got a question, maybe about plants that might or might not work in your soil, or maybe you have a question about the soil itself, or a little more about an individual type of soil that you do have. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News and Garden Talk.
Antigo soil, do you know? Wisconsin's crops and livestock grow in forests too on Antigo. In forests too on Antigo. Great Lakes region, fertile land, glaciers spread both clay and sand. It's smooth silt than for a screw, giving soils their brownish hue.
Talking soil and the plants and their relationship with our guest, Brian Scherenbrock, Associate Professor of Soil Science at UW Stevens Point. Great to have him with us. Let's talk about finding out about your soil. There are, you know, probably what's the best way for the average person to find out about their soil?
Oh, yeah. So how can you tell if your soil is good, bad, or somewhere in between? I think you want to start with first, what are you using your soil for? There's many different functions that soils perform. Are you growing corn on it? Is it a forest soil? Are you using it for a septic system? So that will define a little bit about some of the indicators that you would focus in on, these kind of clues that'll tell you about soil quality. I think for your audience, you're mostly going to be interested in growing plants and garden plants in particular. So there are a handful of physical, chemical, and biological indicators that folks will look for soil quality for these purposes. So for example, looking at the soil structure, and those are these little clumps of soil, how the sand, silt, clay, and organic matter are held together. And that's one of my favorite indicators. And what you're looking for is this crumbly, granular structure that looks like a bunch of BBs all the way to marbles. And that's there because of the high organic matter and essentially the gluing of the sand, silt, and clay together in those little balls. And that indicates a lot of biological activity, both in plants and microorganisms. And that's ideal because it's going to allow for the water to drain out of the soil and also the water to be held in the soil. So that's a really great physical indicator. An example of a biological indicator, organic matter is so important for soil quality. So if we can look at the soil to assess how much organic matter is in it, if it has a dark color, if it has that organic smell compared to like an anaerobic or sour smell, if it has that sort of, I always say like a 70% chocolate bar color, that's kind of what we're looking for, that brownish color. And then, of course, you know, the plants growing in there, you don't forget about them. They're living in that environment. If you see great, vigorous plant growth, that's one of our best indicators of soil quality. Other animals like earthworms and fungi. And sometimes we have chemical indicators. Those tend to be a little bit more difficult to assess. And oftentimes folks will collect soil samples and then send them off to the laboratory for that. But there are some simple tests like assessing the soil pH, which you can do from things like garden kits, that can give you some loose approximations about your soil acidity, alkalinity.
We have Dean in Iron River with a question. Let's go there. Hi, Dean. Thank you for calling. Dean, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon. I had a question. I'm growing pumpkins up in Iron River. I'm just wondering, somebody told me like pumpkins grow better in like a sandier content soil, or I don't know what that means, but was wondering if you had anything to say about that.
I don't know a lot about pumpkins in particular and soil preferences. What kind of soil do you have? Are you aware? Is it more of a sandy soil?
It's not very sandy. It's very thick. It's right near like a wetland, and okay. It's been farmed for decades by my father, but I've taken it over, and so it's sort of very moist, low. I don't know how to talk about.
Yeah, have you tried growing pumpkins on it so far?
I have, and I've gotten a pretty good crop this year. I'm just wondering whether or not I can make it better. So
yeah, they do prefer a more drained soil, which is why folks will say the sandier soils. And if you do have a higher water table, one of the things that you could look to do is maybe mound it up a little bit. So take some of that soil and create, a 1, 2, 3 foot mound. That's actually how I grow my pumpkins as well, too, just because of that drainage issue. You could add a little bit of organic matter if your soil looks light in color. Applying a little compost might be a good strategy for that.
Yeah, for sure. But I like the idea of hilling for sure. That will make a difference, I would think, Dean. Mm-hmm. Give it a shot. Let's go to Karen in Black River. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have a barnyard area, and I have this one area where it has had a lot of manure on it in past years, but it's been a while. The soil is just super dark, rich black, but it's a pretty big section, maybe 20 by 30, and it's wet all the time, like constantly. I'm just wondering if the way to figure out if there's a spring or something underneath there, how would I...
So how would you go about determining if there's a spring or something under that area? Is that your question, Karen?
Yeah. Like, who do I even call about that?
when you look outside of the manure affected area, what does that area look like?
Oh, that's just all dry and sandy, and
yep.
The rest of the barnyard's all nice and clean and sandy, and and there hasn't been manure on that area for many years, but it's just and every place else is dry.
Yep.
I live, the horses are up on a hill, so I have fantastic drainage, and it doesn't always get the best sun to dry it out, but it gets enough that it should not be wet like every single day, every single year.
Yep. So organic matter is really great, but when you have so much, it really holds on to water. And if what you're describing sounds to me like you just have a lot of manure in that particular soil. One thing I would suggest doing is, you know, when you expose organic matter to the air, it'll start to decompose. And you could till that area. And that will work to oxidize some of that organic matter. And then over time, it would probably become, it would reduce the water holding capacity and dry it out a little bit. That's what I would try to start with. You might even just dig in with a shovel to see how deep it is. Because if it's, you know, if we're talking about really thick organic horizons that are 2 or 3 feet deep, that might take a little bit more work to do what I'm describing.
Yeah. So get the shovel out and see, and so if it's a foot or less, Brian?
Yep. I think you could till that up, and you might have to hit it a couple times, but then it would work to decompose that.
All right. There you go, Karen. Thank you so much for calling. Jonathan in Fitchburg has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello. So this might be a really technical question. I've been reading a lot about microplastics and, you know, how they're working their way into us via our food and the environment in general. And I was curious if that's something that you're studying with soils and if it's getting to us through our food that we grow in soil, or if that's not really something that, not that we need to worry about, or if it's just not an issue with plants as much as it is with, you know, like fish have tons of microplastics.
Yeah,
that's a great question. So microplastics would fall into categories of these sort of toxic things that we can be exposed to either directly or indirectly through soils and plants. And folks are studying it. It's a relatively new area of study in soil science, obviously, because it's a relatively new sort of issue in our society. And they are studying things like, are these things being taken up into plants? Are they decomposing? If they're decomposing, what sort of organisms are involved in their decomposition? And then where are these products going? Are they going into our waters and to our wherever they're ending up? It's not something that I myself am studying. I study urban soils, and I study more the toxins. I focus in on are heavy metals, and we started studying a little bit on PFAS as well too. So I can't speak towards the specifics on it other than to say that folks are definitely looking into it and it's research that's happening.
All right. Jonathan, thank you so much for calling. Jan in Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Last year in the fall, I put down cardboard on my vegetable garden and put on a layer of about 6 inches of lasagna gardening, primarily fresh vegetable scraps. And I did not see a noticeable improvement this summer, and I was wondering would it be better to put down a couple of inches of manure, composted manure, across the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, can I ask what are you growing? What plants are you trying to target?
Crucifers mostly in that area.
Okay.
And have you looked at your soil prior to? Did it have a topsoil horizon that was darker in color? And if it did, how big was that?
I have some of the best soil in Viroqua. It used to be a cattle farm.
Yeah.
So I have really good. And it's been organic for over 20 years.
Oh, excellent. So the cardboard, you know, that's for weeds. And I'm assuming you were able to take care of the weeds with that and you don't have a problem with that. The addition of the manure, I mean, I don't, from what you're describing, it doesn't sound like that might be necessary because you have such a high organic matter soil already. I look at organic matter management a little bit like you would do your checkbook. Consider like the outputs, and that would be the nutrients that are associated with the plants that are being taken out, and the inputs would be like my income and the incoming organic matter that might be the plants left on site, or if we do have to add something to it. And it sounds like you have a pretty big balance in your checkbook already, so you might not need to add a lot of organic matter until you start depleting it. Mm-hmm.
So do a little depleting before you do a little adding there.
Maybe because if you keep adding it, you could run into a situation like the previous or a couple callers ago where you have this really high organic matter that can hold on to a little bit too much water, maybe not as strong as a medium in terms of its support. So we want to target about 5 to 10% maximum organic matter in most mineral soils for plants.
Thinking about that, Lori emailed that she has jumping worms and they left the soil looking like coffee grounds and hard to get rid of the worms. Anything she can do to improve the soil. Of course, if you do that, you just keep the worms coming.
The worms, the jumping worms and the night crawlers, boy, that's an issue that we have in some of our Wisconsin forests and even some of our managed areas now. They really rip through that organic matter layer. There's some active research looking at things like charcoal, and because they can be irritants for the earthworms. I would certainly continue to add the organic matter because you don't want that all depleted. One thing, if it's not a really large area, you can use extractants. So one of the ways that we study earthworms is by using mustard powder. So we mix up mustard powder with water and we pour that on soil. And it's an irritant for their skin, but it's not a very dangerous one for the environment. And they'll come up. And then you could gather them physically and remove them from a site if it's not a large area. Other ways that you can get them out of the soil is vibrations. So sounding rods folks will put in the ground and pound it and put them up or gather them on wet periods. So if it's a large area, then that's a different story. It's really hard to get them out. Yeah.
It is indeed. I like that mustard idea, though. I hadn't heard that.
Oh, yeah. It's cool. When we teach kids about soil quality, earthworms are so charismatic. And when a bunch of kids are standing around, we pour some mustard liquid on a soil and they see all the worms coming up. Oh, they go crazy. And so do the adults, especially the soil scientists, adults like myself.
And you're talking about dry mustard like we got in our kitchens.
Oh, yeah. You want to get it's better to use the spicier, the better. It's the compound, the glucosinolate in the mustard powder itself is the irritant.
Yeah. Well, this has been interesting and fun, Brian. I thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Maybe we can do this again down the road. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. I'd love to do it again and appreciate the time. And thank you for having me on the show.
Our guest, Brian Scherenbrock. And I tell you what, I think our producer, our technical director today, Jeff Robbins, dug up a copy of the Antigo Silt Loam song, so we can go out on that. I want to thank you all for listening. Brian, of course, again, associate professor at UW-Stevens Point in the Department of Soil Science. Great to have him with us. And I mentioned, along with Jeff Robbins, Lee Rayburn's our other technical director, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnut, our producers, Jill Nadeau, our executive producer, our director, and I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening, and let's listen to a couple of seconds of the Antigo Silt Loam song.
Antigo, soil do you know, Wisconsin's crops and livestock grow, and forests too on Antigo, and forests too on Antigo. Lakes region, fertile land.